that's the Grasslands switch station and the planned Grasslands annex substation. The project footprint is microsited within the project parcel to avoid environmental impacts. This is something that we use the environmental surveys to inform in proposing this project parcel for a permanent footprint. It's 190 acres. It avoids wetlands and drainages, the floodplains. It maintains a 250-foot buffer from the Boardman Conservation Area, and that's Washington Ground Squirrel area. And again, it's predominantly the non-arable soils cited on the least productive of soils, and it's not irrigated.
Can I ask, what's the yellow dashed line?
Yeah, so the yellow dashed line represents the 250-foot buffer from the Boardman Conservation Area. And the blue line represents the 190-acre project footprint, and the red line represents the project parcel.
Okay.
So just with respect to this slide, we did receive ODF&W's comment letter in the record commenting about a proposed setback for wetlands and riparian habitat. We plan to reach out to ODF&W to talk with them about that. We think that it's possible to meet that kind of setback requirement for wetlands, but we just need to analyze it against the conceptual layout, and we'll have further discussions with them and report back to you. Before the July meeting. We also received Thousand Friends comment letter just before the hearing about the soils in particular, and we're prepared to address their comments also about the soils. But if you look in the application materials, we included the soils analysis and an appendix D, I think it was. And there's a figure one in the soils analysis that shows you that the project footprint avoids the higher value soils on the property, which are class four. And so those class four soils are located in the avoided area, whereas the remainder is predominantly class seven. Friend's letter did raise a question about the location of the ABA in relation to the project footprint. We did evaluate the ABA in the soils analysis. There's about 50 acres within the project footprint. Given the ABA's, you know, the way that the Vineyard ABA looks at slope and aspect, and we're going to be prepared to present an updated map showing where those acres are.
That's American Viticulture Area. Yeah. Okay. In case ABA.
And so that wasn't shown on figure one in the soils analysis. So we'll update it to show that location also. Next slide. This slide talks about the elements of the proposed project itself. We're proposing a data center campus with multiple data center warehouse buildings within the project footprint. That's the primary, you know, facility components. And then there will be accessory facility components, including, you know, parking for employees, internal access roads, on-site septic, stormwater and waste management, wastewater management systems. All stormwater and wastewater will be managed on site. There'll be fire protection, including water storage, backup power supply, and on-site substation and electrical interconnection. And so you'll see here. This is the conceptual layout that we evaluated project impacts for, with the development occurring within the hashed black area, and then you'll see the approximate locations of the on-site retention pond for stormwater and evaporation pond.
Sorry, I'm
trying. Wastewater stormwater management systems there.
And what's the hatched mark area?
That's part of the facility footprint where buildings might be proposed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So before we move on to the next slide, that's a lot of information about the project parcel, project footprint, and project components. So just want to take a moment to see if there's any questions just about the kind of the basics of the project location, the project property, or the project elements.
Sure, I have questions. Okay. So first of all, I don't know if you've been out there. Have you been out there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's a lot of wildlife out there. Mm-hmm. It's not just contained within the boundary of the Boardman Conservation Area. Do you plan to accommodate that in any way?
Yes, and we can talk about that. Actually, it's a good transition to the next slide, because we can share the consultations and studies that we've done to address that, including working with ODF&W on our Washington ground squirrel surveys work that we did out there, as well as looking at particular habitat and the wetlands. So, David?
So like deer and elk that are out there, there's herds, there's many. Have you looked
at that? Hasn't come up in our conversations with ODF&W, but given we're going to follow up with them on the setback comment, we can...
I just can't see them grazing.
Raise that, too.
So,
yeah.
And that's one question I had, looking just at the map. Let somebody else talk.
Okay. We'll note that as a follow-up.
I also don't know if it's in the critical winter range. I didn't check that in Goal 5. Do you know if we have that map?
Yes, we do. I think it's hanging on the wall.
Okay. Yeah. It's a pretty antiquated map, but actually the more accurate resource... We'll need to see if it's a protected Goal 5 resource, so I didn't even think about that aspect, so we can check that. I think in Morrow County, that is a deer range, but I'll double check. Okay.
David, are you online and Zoom?
I'm here and ready to jump in.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for taking the time for us. I've been working on this project since early summer of 2021, when I first interacted with Three Mile Canyon leadership and ownership, when we entered into an agreement to option purchase this land. We have been working and doing due diligence on the site ever since then. Our process starts with desktop work, studying all the available maps data that's available online, and then we follow up that with field work and field investigations. As you can see, there's a number of them identified here. Probably one of the more critical ones that we identified early on was the Washington brown squirrel as a threatened and endangered species. We're obligated to comply with all of the federal regulations and Washington, Oregon state regulations as it relates to threatened and endangered species. So to that point, we did three different studies under the guidance of Fish and Wildlife looking for the Washington ground squirrel, which is a protected species in Oregon. They're not a federally endangered species, but a protected species in Oregon. We did, in advance of our geotechnical investigation, we did a sweep around all the boards that we were going to look for. And then we did two different transect studies to determine whether there's presence or absence of Washington ground squirrels in the area. And our results came back with no presence of Washington ground squirrels that could be found. Then we've also, you know, as you can see, all the other studies that we've done, wetland delineations, cultural resource work as well. So we've been interacting there with all the different tribes, you know, the Confederated tribes, the Navy, Public Works, ODSL as well. So we've we have a few more things to continue to dive in a little deeper. So thank you for your consideration.
Thanks, David. With that, any specific questions about the studies or the consultations that helped inform the application? Should I keep going? Okay. Next slide, please. So the consultations and the studies helped inform the proposed findings that we presented in the application. As Tamara mentioned in the staff report, the structure of the application is to address the applicable criteria from Morrow County's zoning ordinance, Morrow County's comprehensive plan, and statewide planning goals, along with DLCD's rules requiring reasons to justify a goal exception. And so our application presents the evidence based on the data from the work that we've done to to prepare the application to demonstrate reasons that justify an exception to the requested goals, so goal 3, 11, and 14. We presented four reasons as a basis to justify the goal exceptions. The first is rural industrial development, which aligns with one of DLCD's enumerated reasons. Minimal impacts to productive agriculture, comparative economic benefit fall under DLCD's other goals, and then the other reasons rule for goal exceptions, and then the air and water suitability and availability as another reason to support the goal 14 exception. We analyzed alternative sites before selecting the project parcel. That's one of the requirements of the test for requesting a goal exception. I'll talk a little bit more about the methodology that we applied to select the project parcel and the geographic area that we evaluated for potential sites in a couple slides. We also evaluated, as staff mentioned, the EC consequences of the project on the project parcel to demonstrate that there would be no significant adverse EC impacts for using the project parcel for the proposed use. Finally, we analyzed the proposal's potential impacts on surrounding lands. The application defines the surrounding lands as well as what could be the potential impacts from the project and the zone change that we were requesting, and provides findings to support the conclusion that the project and the zone change will be compatible with surrounding land uses and will not have significant adverse impacts. And we can talk about the details of that as we move forward. Next slide, please. Staff published their draft findings, and applicant supports and agrees with the proposed findings that were published. We recognize that staff noted a few areas where there was questions or desire for additional clarification or information. And so those were primarily related to the water supply, construction traffic, and the road use agreement, looking at impacts to Tower Road. The alternatives analysis, as it came up in DLCD's comment email, and then economic development benefits. So I'll touch on each of those in a minute. There was, in response to the construction, traffic, and road use agreement, we met with Public Works Director Eric Imes, as well as with the Planning Director, to discuss the concerns about potential construction traffic impacts on Tower Road. So we're in further discussions with staff, and applicant has also been working with our transportation consultant, Kittleson, and Associates, to provide some supplemental information on the anticipated construction traffic estimates to better inform the discussions around the road use agreement. So that should be happening between now and the next hearing. With respect to water supply, initially, the application considered options for water supply, including, you know, using area groundwater, potentially transfer of water rights to supply the project, as well as exploring the ability to have water supplied by the Port of Morrow. Since we submitted the application, the applicant has had further conversations with the Port of Morrow about providing water services out to the project parcel, and has entered into both the MOU and the letter of intent with the port to provide those water services. So as a result, and in response to some of staff's comments in the draft findings, the applicant has eliminated the option to use groundwater from the project parcel or area water rights through a transfer. So the pathway forward with this application is only to seek water supply from the Port of Morrow through their infrastructure water project that they're proposing at the airport industrial park. And is why we're asking for the goal 11 exception.
Can I just ask a clarifying point? That port water right is a groundwater right or a Columbia River water right from
the
port?
We're going to provide more information on that, because that's a question we have too. But we anticipate, I won't give you the answer yet on the record.
Okay, that's fair.
We have that as a follow-up.
Okay.
Question regarding the water. How is it being conveyed?
It will be conveyed via underground pipe.
Okay, going across what property to get there?
That is to be determined, and those are discussions that are taking place with
the
Port of Morrow. I don't know the answer to that question right now.
Because a lot of this centers around not disturbing agriculture use.
Correct.
And that would disturb agriculture use.
Right, but it would also be temporary impacts because it would be buried.
No,
and so
maybe. I mean, if it had to be repaired or worked on, or if there was an easement needed or something like that, it would definitely impair it.
So
that's just something.
And so how many miles is it from the Ports Airport site to your site?
Depends on how you measure, but it could be about 9 miles.
And also, about the traffic, right now there's a lot of ag going on out there.
Yeah.
So when you are putting in any kind of construction, even coming here tonight, there was a little construction, so there's disturbances with that. So how are you going to mitigate that?
That's one thing we're talking about with the Public Works Director and the purpose of the road use agreement, which could have elements of traffic management measures in it, too, to coordinate with the county as well as area users of Tower Road. One of our proposed conditions you'll see later in the presentation is to require a condition of approval requiring coordination with Three Mile Farm to minimize impacts to farm traffic associated with the construction time period. So,
well, 3 miles not the only one out there. Just a full story, my husband works out there, and Northwest has a lot of employees and cattle and drugs and feed and commodities go back and forth. So I don't think that's a conflict, but I do have that connection out there.
Okay.
And so I'm pretty aware of the area and the usage. And, and in my humble opinion, Tower Road is pretty maxed out right now. So I'm curious how this is okay with the current usage being. I would love to see the transportation report. I would love to see that from Public Works and see why they think that, well, we could handle this. Just on a daily basis, I know what goes on.
Do you want to see the whole, happy to share the whole thing, but for the applicant, it sounds like you are having further consultation with Kittleson about that?
Yeah.
So maybe I can provide the whole commission. What we might do is post it on our website because it's really beefy.
It would be great to hear just somebody summarize it and tell
summarize
us, hey,
it.
This is how many cars are going right now. This is what we expect. This is what we can actually handle.
So does that deal with both construction period and the operational period, the road report?
So the road report, the way the law is constructed for a zone change, the analysis is focused on the post-construction period, but in consultation with Public Works, we've been addressing construction traffic as well. Because we know from data center construction and the reports we've seen, there is a pretty significant amount of construction.
Yeah.
So I will, I think that's a good note for either the applicant or county. I'll ask Eric Imes also to join. He's working some pretty crazy long hours right now, but I'll ask him to join. So we've had a couple of conversations about that. So probably we'll put the traffic study on the website, and because it's, I don't know, it's super long. And then also it sounds like you're asking for like an in-person or more clarification, kind of the common sense stuff. Yeah. Yep, okay, the translation, what it all means.
Yeah, and that's a good point. We can work with Kittleson to provide even maybe a summary memo of the analysis because it is pretty dense. The impact analysis was prepared to satisfy what's called the transportation planning rule. It's required by Goal 12, so it's very structured for a particular reason. But in working with them, because we know we were asked by staff to provide some additional information about anticipated construction traffic volumes. And so in association with talking with Kittleson about that, we can ask for that sort of more summary document to help support the discussion. And we'll plan to provide that during the open record period before the next hearing.
And just to follow up on that, Commissioner Killian, when I talk to our Public Works Director about it, we do have the option to kick it over to another engineer, and then you can end up with feuding engineering analysis. So Eric's really good about deciphering what's really relevant, boots on the ground, and that's where he came up with a couple of recommendations that are in the road use agreement. That doesn't mean that, I mean, you can ask for more, for example. So I'll ask him to, I'll come up with a memo from staff and also before the next meeting. So we'll have something from Kittleson and then have something from county staff, mostly Eric, about what that means.
I would appreciate
it. Yeah, for sure. That's a super good idea. And remember, the burden of proof to show that the existing transportation facility has the capacity and that the application can comply with applicable transportation goals and rules, goal 12, that burden is on the applicant. So we react to what they share to us. They understand that, but it's just one of those nuances. But I think what you're asking makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. During the construction, how many personal vehicles do you think will be going to site?
That's going to be part of the supplemental analysis okay. that we're working on putting together, so we can present that at the next hearing.
But you know how many people are anticipated for construction or not?
For construction?
Yeah.
Do you have that number? I can't remember. It's quite a bit. It's
it's in the hundreds.
Yeah.
It's like 206 in my head. Yeah, I don't know.
Construction would be anticipated 25?
So I just need your chair.
What's that?
Oh, I do have another general question.
When she's done. We had a partition application before the Planning Commission previously for this parcel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Commissioner Killing has another question.
Okay, I just am curious. All this conversation, I mean, it's pretty obvious there's a huge impact on that piece of land and the area. You can't put a structure that large with that many people, with that much activity going on, and expect it just to be like a tree falling in the forest and nobody knows. So, I'm just, step one here, I'm just really curious how we get past that impact issue with the EFU zoning change, because it obviously has a giant impact. Number one, you don't mm-hmm. have water. You have the port's water, and it has to get there somehow. Big impact. And number two, traffic. Mm-hmm. Huge impact. Not just on get the people who currently use that road for ag use and production, but the wildlife, the environment, the actual road itself impact. And I know you said that you'll chip seal and do all that stuff, but that's not the impact on traction. That's actual just maintenance. And the fact that it was the only location you could find when actually it doesn't even meet the criteria for a data center because it's EFU zoned and we are supposed to protect that zone. So I'm still back at point one here. All this other stuff is just extra questions I have. But the first thing that we're supposed to do is protect our family. Now, I know what you said. I heard you. I've read all the reports. But agriculture land, as we all know, doesn't always have to be planted and used for to grow a crop to have value. There's a lot of value in the environment that surrounds it, in the animals that use it, in the way that we have land that is unused around our ag production, okay? Mm-hmm. And so it hasn't been irrigated, so we don't know. And we all know that ground can be improved. And we've been doing it for hundreds of years. And so just the fact that the soil may not be perfect for growing today doesn't mean that we can't make it that way. So I'm just curious why we would put a giant concrete section of land in the middle of a beautiful place, yes, that can be used as agriculture, that is being surrounded by agriculture, and say that's okay.
I hear your concerns.
Can I intervene here? But I'm a little bit inclined to let you go ahead and finish, and then it seems like we're getting on the conversation in the middle of the presentation instead of the end, does it matter? Can we just go this route?
I'm
just stuck on step one.
Yeah.
I'm just stuck on the EF.
I think if we keep moving forward, we will
No, and then we can still have these
questions.
Same questions.
Yeah.
Just trying to get through the presentation and then.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, I'm not trying to cut you off.
I just want you to keep that in mind.
No,
as I go forward.
I appreciate that.
And where I'm at from when I saw your application.
And I think part of what we're going to talk about next is the alternatives analysis and why this parcel. And just in short, it's, adjacent less than half a mile to a pre-existing industrial site.
that's been an industrial operation for decades with the PGE Cardi facility. And it is in very close proximity to existing transmission infrastructure and planned transmission infrastructure and electrical upgrades such that, and we're, the project is adjacent to a high voltage transmission line right away. And so this site, one, is already adjacent to industrial operation, historic industrial operations. And it minimizes any high voltage transmission line extensions. And so, and it offers like close proximity for the conveyance of transmission with capacity through Pacific Power. And so those are siting factors that we'll talk about in the alternatives analysis that really make this site the site that came out after all of analysis of the selected site. So I'll turn to that next, if I may. Next slide. And I'm just going to keep talking while I hand these out. So this packet is more detailed information about the siting. I should think has, yeah, thanks. The siting criteria that Rowan used to evaluate.
Oh, okay. I'll pass them.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. So in our application, we included in an appendix our alternatives analysis, and where the next two slides are going to talk through the methodology for performing the alternatives analysis to justify the basis for how Rowan selected the project parcel. The first step of the analysis was to identify the siting criteria that were required for a successful project, and so. There are 8 siting criteria that were used as the basis for the alternatives analysis that we performed. And the first page of your packet includes some more detailed factors that go into each of those siting criteria. And so, next slide, please. Those siting criteria were applied to a number of sites. The steps of the analysis start with, first, we looked at non-resource lands and UGBs of Umatilla and Morrow counties. Those lands are identified on the figures in your packet of figure 6A and 6B. And so that was level one of the analysis of, are there non-resource lands in UGBs that we could site on that meet on balance the siting criteria? The answer was no, so then we moved to the next step of the alternative siting analysis, which is, are there suitable zones outside the UGBs of Morrow and Umatilla counties? Suitable zones are those zones that would allow a data center campus via a permitted or conditional use. And so those geographic areas are shown, again, also on 6A and 6B.
I have a question. Did you analyze the space age industrial zone?
Yes.
Okay. I just didn't see it on 6B.
I think that goes on to.
You're right.
Sheet.
It's on 6C. You're right.
Okay.
Yep. You got it.
So let me help. Where are you at now?
6C. It's one
on
of the pullouts. Yes.
This.
Yes. The what she just handed out to you.
There's a lot.
I know. We'll organize it for you for next month.
Yeah. That's what I need too.
Yeah.
It's the next
one. So page
6C.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then the next step was to look at non-resource lands requiring a zone change but no goal exceptions. And that's figures 6C to 6E. And then the next step was to look at EFU lands. And so if the last page of your packet is table one, which is a written a summary of the analysis that was performed. So you have the first 6 lines go through the first 3 steps of the analysis. And then at the end of that analysis, many sites many potential sites were disregarded for inability to meet the siting criteria, and those are summarized in Table 1. And then the end result was we identified 4 alternative sites and the proposed site. And so that was the group of sites that were further analyzed against the siting criteria. And that included the Cardi Generation Station, the Cardi Open Space BCA, the Umatilla Army Depot, Pedro's Land Company, and then JR Simplot. And the zones we evaluated, included G zones, and it's in that column. So there was a considerable amount of work done and conversations had to go through this, step-by-step analysis, essentially screening potentially suitable sites. And the end result of the analysis was that the project parcel met 7 of the 8 siting criteria except for zoning. And it was EFU land requiring a goal exception. In our alternatives analysis and the goal exception reasons, the site has an excellent locational dependency because of its proximity to existing and planned transmission infrastructure with capacity.
Can I just say, I just noticed that you sent in the original on page 79, this form right here, this table, table 1, is on page 79, table 1, alternatives, and you changed the wording on this. Is there a reason why?
Which one?
The table we're just looking at.
What wording?
The criteria assessments. Well, basically, the landlord didn't want to sell to you. And so you changed the wording in this one to land did not meet landowner requirements. So I'm just curious.
Right.
That was, which one are we going on here?
Are you talking about in the...
In the original packet we got.
I don't know. I'll have to compare. This is... I copied this from
earlier.
What page of your packet was that? 79. 79. Okay.
79.
Of the original packet.
Yeah, the original packet.
One that we received in the mail.
In the, yes.
Table 1, alternatives analysis.
Which alternative site are you looking at?
Well, let's see here.
So we do number our packets.
I don't know.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yeah. I can look into that. I don't know. This was just a printout from our PDFs or our files.
I was curious which one we need to go on for the record. And because I mean that's just information that we could have in our back pockets.
Yeah, I will clarify that.
Actually, the landlord did not want to sell, so that's why.
Well, and I think that's if they didn't want to sell, it wasn't available to be sold. That's part of the ability to just have site control.
But being welcome in an area is important for a business. So I think that's telling for what we need to decide because we represent our citizens, the people in our county, and the people that need to live around the business.
Yes, fair enough. So if I can keep going on the next slide, please. I'm going to hand it over to Martin to talk about the economic impact benefits that this project parcel offers as a part of our goal exception analysis.
Thanks, Elaine. Good evening, commissioners. Once again, Martin Romo, Economic Development Director. So I wanted to share a little bit about the economic impacts that this project can bring the community. We see this as an opportunity to activate a parcel that can bring several economic and fiscal benefits to the area. The project before you would bring at least $500 million of capital investment that would be deployed locally with significant subsequent investment from the operator on a recurring basis. These data center facilities have expensive equipment inside that very frequently becomes outdated and is refreshed, which then increases the amount of the roles for real and personal property that belongs to that particular operator. So it really starts bringing a consistent stream of fiscal benefits to all the taxing jurisdictions. This activity also comes along with a lot of ripple effects of economic impacts beyond just the lines of this particular project. And that's because all of the different supply chain needs for these different parts start to have this induced demand for services and providers and suppliers that will come and help service the facility. And all of this investment would start to get closer to the $1.5 to $2 billion beyond the initial between $500 to $800 million of investment that happens here, comes along with a relatively low impact on our need for public services in comparison to the amount of capital being expended here. And these are public services such as additional school facilities, parks, police, and similar types. A particularly beneficial characteristic of this industry is that it's relatively strong against recessions, given the nature of the services that data centers provide. So actually, in fact, during the COVID-19 pandemic, which slowed economic activity for a lot of different industry sectors, there was actually a stronger demand for this type of facility because of the amount of activity going on online, video conferencing, and things of that nature that drove that demand. And so you see that there was a lot less of an impact on this particular industry as a whole. So to build these types of large industrial facilities, as we've been discussing already, requires robust construction activity for a limited time. We said about in the hundreds for this initial labor force, which will then bring in all the attributed economic activity and wages to the region. And then once that construction is done, we do expect there should be probably in the 50-50 mark of full-time equivalent permanent positions, which will be highly paid, and will bring kind of more security to this new high-tech industry that we've explained already has a great clustering here and we all have witnessed and experienced. I also do want to highlight that a lot of these jobs, while the 35 to 50 kind of FTEs that we're quoting at this time seems like a relatively low number, does come with a lot of ripple effects for jobs. A recent study found that about 4 to 5 additional jobs are created for each one of these data center jobs just because of the nature of the tech industry job that it is. Next slide, please. And so these data center operators, we recognize that having a local workforce is key. As you know, we need to make sure that this site will be able to be operated in, for the foreseeable next 15, 30 years. And to that end, a lot of the hyperscale operators that run these types of facilities do a lot to support existing workforce development programs in the community or to establish new programs. And this helps to ensure that there's a secure pipeline of well-qualified local talent for the high-tech jobs that are necessary to ensure that these facilities can operate. I also wanted to highlight a few of the several local agencies that have planned for local economic development in very thoughtful ways. The Morrow County Comprehensive Plan includes an economic element within its plan that focuses on 4 sectors, including large industrial activity. And this project would help support the policies of that plan, specifically by helping to advance the expansion of job opportunities, the reduction of unemployment, the reduction of out-migration of youth by investing in some of these workforce efforts, and by helping to accommodate growth of the county workforce in general. Additionally, the project would help support the Greater Eastern Oregon Development Corporation Comprehensive Development Plan by advancing the goal of encouraging industry clusters. As we mentioned, we already have this existing high-tech cluster in the area, and it is the cluster that will be continuing into the foreseeable future and will keep the region competitive for this new economy. Goal 2 as well is advanced here by encouraging diversification of local economic activity. That helps to increase stability and resilience. As I mentioned, this particular industrial sector is quite resilient in comparison to some of the other ones that are more susceptible to economic recessions. So by bringing forward a facility that will help create significant employment, attract over $500 million of initial dollars and subsequent other $500 million up to almost $2 billion in investment, and really turn this piece of what's been historically dormant land into an economically contributing property for the county, we believe that it'll be a benefit for the regional community as a whole. And I'll hand it back to Elaine on the next slide.
Thanks, Martin. Next slide, please. So this slide reflects applicants' proposed conditions that we presented in our pre-hearing submittal. These supplement staff's recommended conditions based on the comments that we've received to date for the project. And so this goes to the comments from the Public Works Director about the road use agreement for managing traffic, minimizing and mitigating construction traffic impacts. And so that's the first one. And then the second one would be a required coordination with